Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're now today in Lesson 50, and we are still in Chapter 20 of the Book of Matthew. At this point, Jesus Christ made it very plain that if you want to be great, as he told his disciples, then you should alter your attitude, your concept of what is important or what is not. You see, what is great in the sight of God and what is not. It's not the one who is in charge that is great in the sight of God, but the one that serves. You see, because a lot of people who are in charge by themselves, you know, they just lord it over others, exercise authority over others, and let others, you know, do their servants, and don't have that attitude of God. You see, God is the greatest servant in the universe. And if he was not that kind of a God, you see, we wouldn't be where we are. He has to sustain the whole universe. He has to make sure everything works. He's busy all the time, serving, serving, serving. And unless we develop that nature, we don't understand divinity. You see? We don't understand greatness. We don't understand service. And these people, unfortunately, they just want to be, you know, the boss. You know, I want to be on top. I want to be riding over others. You know, I want to be the king. I want to be the pope. I want to be, you know, the cardinal. I want to be the bishop, the, you know, the president, you know, the CEO, and so forth. And that's the way we think. You know, I want to be number one, top of the hill. That's our concept. So everybody's going to, you know, gravel at my feet. You see? Lick the dust around my feet. You know, kneel down before me, kiss my ring, things like that. He says, you're all perverted. That's the way you think. That's the way the devil works. We don't work like that in the divine family. And so explain to them. He says, just as the Son of Man, you follow my example. I did not come to be served. It could have been, could have said, hey, here I am, the Son of Man. Here are all those signs and wonders and miracles, and I'm going to sit on the chair, and you're all going to bow down to me, and you're all going to serve me and prepare my meals and all kind of things like that and carry me. And, you know, as a matter of fact, some religious leaders, they like to be carried, you see, as if they were, you know, the emperors, you know, showing what manner of spirit they are. You know, they weren't willing to walk like all the others, well, on their own feet. But that's not of God, you know. You don't find the chief leaders of the presidents, you know, the CEOs and things like that, you know, driving just an ordinary car, just like the employees, you know, they're all brothers. You know, what kind of games are we playing? Now, instead of that, they want to be carried, you know, in limos and fancy cars and things like that. You see, once upon a time, everybody had a donkey, so it didn't make any difference whether you were a king or a pauper, you know. You all rode a donkey or a horse. Right? Nowadays, we've got the opportunities, you see, so we can have fancy horses or fancy donkeys. He said, don't be like that. I didn't behave that in that way. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Beyond that, not just to serve, but to even give his life. How many function like that? He said, are you, you know, when you ask for that high position, is that what you are after? You're willing to serve and, you know, and be willing to give your life for others? Well, obviously, this is not what they were looking for. But the carnal, you know, concept of riches and greatness and, you know, high positions, and they begin, you know, to jockey for a position, and they have, you know, a lot of conflicts and picking, you know, pecking order, and I'm more important than you are, and I'm pulling ranks on you, and I'm in charge and things like that. These are all the devil. That's the way his kingdom functions. You see, he's got his chief demons. He's got, you know, his peon demons. And then he injects that into the heart of man to function in the same manner, and people do. And yet they claim to be religious people. Because everywhere they have that problem. They've got politics, you know, in Rome, you know, in the Vatican. They've got politics in the Supreme Court of the you know, rabbinic courts. They've got it, you know, in every given religion. All of them function that way. And they hate one another, kill one another, destroy one another. They've done it in Islam. They've been doing it for centuries. That's why they have a separation, you know, between their movements, Sunnis, you know, and Shiite, and you've got others. That's the nature of man. That's the nature of the devil. That's not the nature of God. You see, in one of these days, all of us are going to wake up and face our Maker, and we're not going to be playing games anymore and hate one another. You see, and if somebody corrects us on those kind of things, you know, we want to kill him. That's what the people have done to the prophets of Israel. That is the prophets of God. And the ones that did it to them generally are the prophets of Israel who killed the prophets of God and told them, whom do you think we are? You know, you are, that is. It goes on to this very day. He says, don't function like that. And yet look at the world, you know, the world in which we are. We've got this minimum wage. Well, we got those people that do a little bit, make a little bit of money, and others a lot of money. You find those ads, you know, about lawyers. You know, I charge only $150 an hour. Imagine that. And some, you know, $250, $500,000 and all that before. Why did you know, you have all these huge lawsuits. Who gets all the millions? Not the people that sue, but the lawyers. Why? You see? Why should a man, you know, who claims to be a humble person, I charge only $150 per hour, would take a person who makes a minimum wage, or maybe he doesn't, maybe he makes more, because some people may make more than lawyers, but a lot of people don't, the majority don't, and a poor guy like that, he needs the help of a lawyer, so he goes to him, and he charges him $150 per hour when he makes only, you know, $7 or $13 or $25 maybe, if, you know, if he's doing well, and the physician does the same. You go to the hospital, they charge you an arm and a leg, and before you know it, you owe hundreds of thousands of dollars for an operation. Why do they charge so much? Because they're all of the devil, that's why. They're not servants. They're not there to serve. They're not to say, there to say, now, wait a minute, this is my brother. How can I treat him like that? You see, what is he going to eat? How is he going to feed his family? How is he going to pay the rent? They couldn't care less. All those who call themselves the professions, they couldn't care less. And that's why the economy is up and down and all these problems that we constantly have, and that's why we have strikes and we have, you know, employees and employers and all those kind of problems that we have, you see. And yet a lot of those people claim to be religious. They believe in God. They follow Christ or they follow Moses or they follow Muhammad and things like that. Do they really? You see, you don't see it. In their conduct, by the fruits, you know them. That's what he told them. And if everybody who calls himself a Christian, a follower of Christ, or a follower of the God of Israel, you see, or even a follower of Muhammad, when you read his Quran, he didn't teach what people, you know, do nowadays, or they have done in the past, you know, oppressing one another, afflicting one another, lording over others, exercising dominion authority over them, regardless in whatever faith you find people are, you know, be it Buddhist or Shintoist, you know, those leaders, when they came, what they taught is not what people later on claim to be the teachings of their leader. You see? That's the nature of men. Unfortunately, that's why we have these kind of people to this very day. And that's why, you know, the whole world is full of evil and crime and madness and insanity and oppression and terrorism. You see? All those things are results of our own actions. And people are not willing to admit it. They just say, well, they're the bad guys, we're the good guys, look what they did to us. God bless America, God bless Israel, God bless England, God bless this and God bless that. You know, they say that among themselves, Allahu Akbar. And then they go and butcher one another and hate one another and fornicate and do all kind of evils and steal and rob and defraud. And the leaders at the top oppress, you know, the majority of the people at the bottom. You see, because we're all children of the devil, that's why. Until we're going to acknowledge that and depart from that, you see, and be obedient children of God and follow his example, as it said here, look at me. You see? Who was greater than him on the earth at the time when he was there? Nobody. And he says, I didn't come to be served. You see? Not only I came to serve, but I came to give my life as a ransom. Well, follow my example. Then, well, let's talk about, you know, who is the greatest and who wants to be a ruler. And now as they went out to Jericho, in verse 29, a great multitude followed him, and behold, two blind men sitting by the road, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. Here it is, two blind people, not the high and the mighty, and they recognized him as the God of Israel. Who else can be called the Lord, the Adon? You see? The Son of David, the Messiah, who is going to come and reign up over the whole earth. See, the knowledge was still there among the common people of the two divine beings. And here it is, the one that was prophesied to come, and he came. He came to his own wife, because he is her God and her husband and her Lord and Master. You see, obviously not many people are willing to acknowledge that or to understand that or to believe that. And yet his own people, these are all Jews. You know, these are not so-called Christians, Catholics, Protestants, you know, Greek Orthodox. These are all Jews. Having that knowledge and understanding there, and later on that knowledge departed. because some poisoned the minds of many and they passed it on from generation to generation, until the end of time when God says, I'm going to descend on the Mount of Olives, and then they shall see me whom they have pierced. They didn't do it personally, but they were responsible for it, along with the others. You see, and they're not going to be deceived anymore. He's going to pour the Spirit of grace and supplication on all, and open their eyes, and they shall be his people, and as Paul said, all Israel shall be saved. Until that time, that's what you have. Blindness, ignorance, and confusion, and oppression, and affliction, and terror, and war, and bloodshed. Then the multitude warned them. Imagine that. Here it is, two poor, poor guys, they need help. They're blind, and they're crying, Lord, save us. And the multitudes warned them, you better shut up, or else. You see? What kind of an attitude is that? They follow Christ, and they have the attitude of the devil. That's how people are. The multitude warned them that they should be quiet, keep your mouth shut. But they cried out all the more. They're not about to give up, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. So Jesus Christ is walking, and all this multitude around him, and the disciples around him, they all told him to hush, forget, shut up. You're bothering the master. What about all of his teachings? He just gave that teaching to the multitudes to be a servant, to care for people, to be willing to give their lives for people, and they turn around and they do just the opposite. And that's the way man is and will always be until Christ, although the Father removes that heart of stone that is in us and replaces it with a heart of flesh. And the way he's going to do it is by making us go, through the ringer, so to speak. And he's going to crush us to pieces. And then he's going to rebuild us as humble and meek and righteous. No more haughty, no more arrogant, no more with a heart of stone. And put his Spirit in us and write his laws in our hearts this time. And so the multitude don't get the picture yet. The multitude warned them that they should be quiet, but they cried the more, all the more, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, Son of David. So Jesus stood still. Now he walks down the road. And the first thing he does, he stands still. Imagine you're standing there and you see that happening. And people say, uh-oh, what's going to happen now? He stands still and called them, these two. So he turns around and he calls them and said, what do you want me to do for you? That's exactly what he said, I came. I came to serve. I came to give my life. And look at all those people, including his own disciples, instead of saying, hey, we've learned a lesson. Call them. Give the master an opportunity to serve them. They did just the opposite. You see? And so he's true to his own nature. People say, you've got to be true to your own nature. Problem is, that nature oftentimes is not of God. So that's not a blessing, be true to your own nature, but a curse. Oftentimes. And so he calls them. He says, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. Is that a horrible thing to ask for? Why is it that the multitude were against them? Why the disciples didn't do anything about it when they were just taught how to be a great person? What's wrong with our skull head, our thick head? All of us have it. We can go to services, sit down, hear a beautiful sermon, or beautiful drash, as they call it in the synagogue, an explanation, and commentary on the Bible, teaching good things, and then we go out and do just the opposite of what we heard. That means we were bearing false witness all along. We were liars. That's the way we function, and we don't think that way. You find those politicians, they go to church, they sit there, and they hear a beautiful sermon, they go out and do just the opposite. What's the matter with us? That's because we're all children of darkness, that's why. Children of the devil, not of God. Oh, we're children of God because he created us, but we do not follow his path. We don't walk in his way. We don't carry our cross. We don't serve others. We don't give our lives for others. You see, we do our own thing. We just like to hear those wonderful, wonderful words. What a beautiful sermon. And nobody remembers it, a couple of hours later. And so, they told him, just open our eyes. That's all we ask. I'm not asking for money, position, or, I want to be there, sitting on your right hand or left hand, things like that. I don't want to be your disciple, just follow you, and get that office or position, just open our eyes, that's all. So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes. the multitude didn't have compassion. Leaders in government really don't have compassion. They have a little bit of it, yes, because it's going to help them get voted again into office. And they have a little bit because they're human beings. You know, human beings by nature have a little bit of compassion. But generally speaking, this is not their nature. Otherwise, most of the laws that they make would not be there. You see, gouging the many, enriching the few. That's why you've got all those, you know, lobbying there. All the lobbyists, they know that. They know the nature of the politician. You know, give him some money, bribe him, he'll do your bidding. And then you get business, you get money, you get all that, and all those poor peons out there are going to be taken, you know, into the cleaner, so to speak. And that's the way they function. That's not compassion. That's not our nature. That's just a random act of compassion. That's not a nature. That's not by definition that we are compassionate. We are not. And very few are willing to acknowledge that. That's all. That's why only the very few are going to make it through the door, the narrow path, and the many go through the Broadway, and they will come to him and say, "Where are your people too?" And says, "I never knew you, because your actions, your attitudes, your nature and character, your life, your example, did testify that I was not in you. So I don't know you. Get out of here. Go somewhere else." And so he had compassion and touched their eyes. And immediately their eyes received sight and they followed him. Now they became his disciples. Yeah, they had eyes to see. Where else would they go now? Where else would he want to go? You see? And that became their life. You know, would be interesting to know how they ended up their life. One of these days we'll see them and talk to them and ask them those kind of questions. Chapter 21. Now when they drew near to Jerusalem, that is Christ and his disciples, and came to Bethpage, that was a name of a town, a village there, you see, and Beth means house of Page, whatever Page meant, and at the Mount of Olives, that was nearby there, then Jesus sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go into the village opposite you," just nearby here, see, nearby Jerusalem, "and immediately you will find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Loose them and bring them to me." Now, all that is plain, you see, all these details are planned by God. They are planned, you know, from above. Those are not coincidences, you see. So God was in the process from beginning until the end of the road of Jesus Christ. From the moment he was born to the day he was crucified, God was there planning all those details. And Christ knew it, and Christ followed and obeyed the voice of God and the voice of the commandments of God, you know, until the end. Never tried to alter the plan, do his own thing. And this is a part of it. And he says, "And if anyone says anything to you, you shall say, the Lord, Adon, the Master, has need of them, and immediately he will send them." So even the person who is going to be involved, you know, seeing the donkey and being taken away, you know, by those two guys he's never seen in his life, probably, he's going to say, "Oh, okay." So God again is going to work out that detail. "And all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying," aha, it was planned long in advance. You see, there are some people in their ignorance and blindness, they claim, well, you know, people are trying to historicize, you see, all those events by saying, well, you know, the prophet said and talked about it, and they're making fun of that. Where is their God? Where is their faith? Where is their knowledge and understanding that God is planning all those details, that he's very busy in the lives of human beings, as he said many times, that he's aware of the birds, of the hair, you know, that fall off our head? You see, he knows all those things, he does all those things, yet people constantly make fun of the word of God. And yet they claim to be righteous, or people of religion. And so it says, "All this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, tell the daughter of Zion, behold your king." Who is the king of Israel? We're not talking about David and Saul and Samuel and all the other kings that were there. And Zechariah, you know, and Hezekiah and many other kings, Josiah, all the kings of Israel. Who is the king? God. He's the king of Israel. You see? The Adon, the Master, the Deliverer, the Messiah. He's the king of Israel, and he's standing right there. And here it is, God through the prophet Isaiah already prophesying that. And we, you know, when people read it, you know, the Jewish community, they had no doubt that, you know, that this is speaking about the God of Israel, the Elohim of Israel, who is sent by the one from above him, the El Elyon. That knowledge was always there in the days of the prophets, before the prophets, after the prophets, to the days of Jesus Christ. And some in the Jewish community still kept it. It kept that knowledge and understanding. But because of all that deception that, you know, began to be taught in Judaism, Rabbinic Judaism, that there is no such a thing, well, it was not convenient for the majority to speak it in public, but there were rabbis, and to this very day, when they read these things, they know better. They don't read the New Testament, but they read the Old Testament. Some of them read the New Testament too, they know better. You know, but you cannot tell everybody about it, or, you know, you'll get booted out of office and thrown out of the community, and people don't like that. Why? Because they love the praises of men more than the praises of God, and the fear of men more than the fear of God. Well, the day's coming when nobody's going to be playing games anymore. Here it is. God said it, recorded it, the prophet recorded it, and it's coming to pass right now, and people see it. Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, lowly and sitting on a donkey. And God spoke through Zechariah in this case. You can read it in Zechariah, this passage, Zechariah chapter 9. You see, that's the way he's going to appear. The first time, you see, and because they got confused, knowing that many in many prophecies he comes as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and powerful, mighty deliverer, and he's going to deliver them, and here he just shows up, you know, not in a limo, not being, you know, not carried, you know, by charioteers and, you know, a lot of people and things like that, you know, as the emperors like to be and others, not, you know, riding on a beautiful horse, just on a donkey. So people look at him as a big deal. Well, who is that guy? You see? But the people that understand, they know the nature of God. It was deliberate that it would be a donkey, not a horse. You know, the Romans, centurions were riding on them. They wouldn't ride on a donkey. That was, you know, below them. And he's riding on a donkey. Lowly. Humble, that is. Sitting on a donkey, a colt. You know, a young one. The foal of a donkey. Not even a big, you know, big, nice, mature one. Just a little thing, you know. And that's the way we, you know, we think. Well, if he's somebody, he isn't going to be like that. He's going to ride, you know, on a limo. He's going to, you know, come with old people all around him and riches everywhere and power and authority. And that's when somebody comes who looks like nobody, riding on nothing. They say, whom do you think you are? You are nobody. That's the nature of man. It's not the nature of God. So God is planning all these details. That's why it's happening. So the disciples went and did as Jesus commanded them. They brought the donkey and the colt, laid their clothes on them, you know, on the animals, so he would not sit on the beast itself, probably stunk or whatever, not clean, and set him on them. You know, they carried him, put him on the donkey. And a very great multitude spread their clothes on the road. Why? Because they knew that this is the king, the Messiah, the king of Israel, the prophesied deliverer and redeemer of Israel, the one that married them in Sinai. There was an awful lot of knowledge at the time that disappeared shortly after, unfortunately, because great darkness fell on Israel. And so a very great multitude spread their clothes on the road. Others cut down branches from the trees and spread them on the road. You see, that's what they did. And then the multitudes who went before, and those who followed, cried out, saying. So you find here the overwhelming majority of the people of Israel, of the Jews, worshipping their king, their Lord, their Master, their Messiah. And what happened after that? You see? How come the whole nation that here seems to be all going for him turned around and went their own way? Well, because they were deceived by their leaders. He didn't deliver us, he didn't redeem us, and many said, well, I guess this was not the real Messiah, because if he was, in other words, not understanding the plan of God, he didn't come at that time to do it. You see, he just came to begin to build the church, gain, you know, a few followers to become the teachers, and gradually, you know, get more and more and more, but still very few in comparison. And it's only 2,000 years down the road when he comes. That's when the big scenario is going to be played there before all, not now. So they said, well, you know, I guess we just were deceived. This must not be the Messiah. Let's wait for somebody else. Well, a lot of confusion there. In other words, not enough knowledge of the law of God to understand the entirety of the story. So this is what we read here. Then the multitude who went before and those who followed cried out, saying, Hosanna, Hosanna in Hebrew means save us, to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And Christ always came in the name of the Lord from the beginning of time, from the time he came to the Garden of Eden. He came in the name of the Lord. He too was the Lord. But there was one that was higher than him, as it said, my Father is greater than I. You see, and that knowledge was always understood in Israel, that the angel of the Lord is sent by the Lord, but the angel of the Lord himself is the Lord, and that's why they saw in the scriptures that sometimes he's called the Lord, Elohim, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, sometimes the angel of the Lord, sometimes the captain of the Lord of hosts, and so forth. You see? Well, what happens when people become blind and are deceived and confused and walk in darkness, and they think that they are in the light, and you find them in any given religion? That's what happens. They get confused. And so they said, blessed be he that comes in the name of the Lord, Hosanna in the highest. I was speaking about the one that sent him, you see. And when he had come into Jerusalem, and obviously this is a statement that was recorded earlier in the prophets, you can read it in other places. But, you know, in the Psalms, you read it, you know, in Psalm 119, verse 26. You know, that knowledge was there common among the people. Wasn't totally forgotten yet at the time, but later on it became forgotten knowledge and understanding and misunderstood. Verse 10, and when he had come into Jerusalem, all the city was moved, saying, who is this? I've never, never seen a thing like that, this kind of a procession. So the multitude said, so here the people of Jerusalem and this multitude and other people of Jerusalem, they are the ones that accompanied him to Jerusalem. And they said, this is Jesus, the prophet from Nazareth of Galilee. You see? So he's the prophet from Galilee, yes, but they also knew that he's the Son of God, that he's the Lord, that he's the Master, that he's the King of Israel. You see? It's true. Some people thought, well, it's just, you know, the prophet. But other people understood. Not all of them had the same knowledge and understanding of the entirety of the story. There were gradations there of comprehension. And then Jesus, verse 12, went into the temple of God. Now it's his Father, and that's his temple too. As it says in Malachi, and the Lord whom you seek, the Adon, here it is, the Adon, shall come to his temple. So this was his temple, but also the temple of the God of Israel, you see, that was above him. And Israel understood it. And then gradually that became, you know, misunderstood by many. Darkness fell upon their eyes. God blinded them. He said he would, and he did. And gradually he did more and more and more. The more you reject God, the more, you know, he takes away knowledge and understanding from you. And that was a reality there. And, of course, people like that are not willing to acknowledge that, no more than those who call themselves Christians are willing to acknowledge that they are walking in darkness, you see, until they all stand before the throne of God. And then their eyes are open, and they begin to see their darkness and confusion. And so the first thing he does, he goes to the temple of God, and he drove all those who bought and sold in the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And that's what he told them at the time. Now, there is another account for it, and I get the impression that it happened at the beginning of his ministry, and this one is at the end of his ministry, maybe done it twice. We don't know all the details. Some people look at that and say, well, there is a contradiction there. People don't know what they're writing. How can we trust them? Well, they put the entirety of the whole story together. You see, if it happens twice, there's no contradiction. Or for some reason, if, you know, if somebody just sort of misplaced events, that happens too, and God allows it. That's not a contradiction. And just, you know, sometimes, you know, you think that you've done it yesterday when you've done it 3 weeks ago, you know, 3 days ago. Well, things like that, well, happens to all of us. You see, and sometimes, you know, people forget that. In either case, here it is described in Matthew as the end of his ministry, the time when he went to Jerusalem before his crucifixion. And this is what he did, because that's exactly what God is going to do. First, he's going to clean his own people, you see, and when he's among his own people, he's going to clean the temple first, the center of worship, you see, and then he's going to begin to clean his people, and then gradually go somewhere else. And so it is in the plan of God. First, he's going to cleanse and purge and purify his own people, Israel, as you read in Zechariah 12 and then 14, the same story in essence. The tenth of Judah shall be saved first. Then he's going to bring back all of Israel. So first he's going to deal with those who are right there in Jerusalem, you know, in the land also. And then he's going to bring all the people of Israel and clean them too and open their eyes. And then he's going to set his hand to deliver all the nations of the earth. And when people do not understand that, they think, oh, well, 2,000 years ago, God just, you know, said, let's forget about all the Jews. I'm going to bring, you know, get me a Gentile church, you know, a Gentile woman. That's basically what it is, you see. And I don't need you, you see. You know, you're my wife, but I'm going to put you away, you know, because you don't like me, I don't like you. And get out, you know, get out of here, you see. And I'm going to get me another wife, a Gentile church. And that's the way they think. And for 2,000 years, this lie has been going on to this very day. And unfortunately, many of them, you know, members of that so-called Gentile church are Israelites who think they are Gentiles and don't know any better. And so the first thing he does, he cleanses his own people, as you read later on in Revelation, where God talks about the same subject in the future. And so we see in the book of Revelation chapter 11, again, something about the temple, chapter 11, verse 1, that I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. You see, you have to begin there. And when you go to Ezekiel 40, you see the same thing in 42. And in the beginning of the prophecy of Ezekiel, he also was told that God is going to begin to deal with his own people first. Jeremiah 7, you know, that is chapter 30, tells us about the trouble that is coming upon the house of Israel first, the house of Jacob, you see. And then it's coming upon all the nations too. That's, you know, God always works that way. You got to clean, in other words, got to clean your own house first before you go and clean the, you know, the houses of others. You know, get your own house in order first. A lot of people forget that, and they like to do it for others before they do it to themselves. And so he says, you measure the temple and those who worship therein, but leave the outer court, which is outside the temple, and who were in the outer court? That was the court of the Gentiles. You deal with them next, later. First, take care of the people of Israel. And do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, you see, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. You see, and that's when he describes the ministry of the two witnesses. We're not going to go through that. We mentioned that earlier in the first series, and we'll come back to it when we get to this section here. But, you know, just the idea that he begins, you know, with his own people in his own temple. And then you read in chapter 7 again, something about the same matter. And we read in, again, speaking about angels and their commission at that time, speaking about the future, right before the coming of Jesus Christ to this earth, all kind of events take place. And then he's speaking to the angel in verse 3 of chapter 7 of Revelation. Do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. You see? Now who are going to be these servants that he's going to seal on their foreheads? And I heard the number of those who were sealed, 140,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. A very plain statement. And how many people among those who call themselves Christians ever believed it? As he made it plain from the beginning, God shall save the tents of Judah first. You see? And then he's going to bring also all the tribes of Israel. They too are going to be among the first. But, you know, since it descends on the Mount of Olives and Judah is there, well, obviously Judah is going to be first. All the tribes of Israel, but among them you find Levites, and you find Benjamites, and you find, you know, a few others. And then here we read about the entirety of the house of Israel. So, these are the children of Israel, the 144,000 are going to be sealed first. Who is the first one? Oh, the tribe of Judah. 12,000 were sealed. That's the number one. As he said in Zechariah, the tribes of Judah, that is the people of Judah, shall be saved first. Well, here it is. Among all the tribes of Israel, the people of Judah, the Jews, as they're called, the Jews, even though, you know, part of them are Levites and other Jews, Levi, you know, Levi is a Levi, but they joined the house of Judah, so they became known as Jews, and half of Benjamin joined the house of Judah, they became known as Jews, but they're really Benjamites from the tribe of Benjamin, and half of them joined the house of Israel. Today they are known as Norwegians, and the people of Iceland, you see, the Vikings. Now, that's what the Norwegians are, you know, the people of Judah, that is, the people of Benjamin, the other half, they went over there. And you know, that's a different story there. But anyway, Judah is first, and then Reuben, and then Gad. And Reuben is the firstborn, then Gad, Asher, and Naphtali, Manasseh. Later, you know, after that, then Simeon, and Levi, and Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, next to last, and then Benjamin. You know, the Norwegians, the Vikings, going to be last. And that's in essence what he's doing here. And he's done it consistently that way, always dealing with his own people first. As he said, you only have I known of all the nations of the earth. I've chosen you first. Why? To be a light to the Gentiles, to the nations. So unless he has Israel first back in their land and back with him, you see, becoming his people, becoming his wife, he cannot have children. And the children are all the nations of the earth. And yet some people say, oh, well, no, he bypassed this process. He forgot about his wife. And he's going to marry this Gentile church. You see, and through us he's going to have children. That's why he called them, no, you are the great whore. And those who come out of you are harlots. And one of these days are going to be facing that very verdict and hear it directly, mouth to mouth, you know. Face to face, they're going to stand and hear it. Until then, they're going to be, you know, playing their games. You know, we're the people of God, we're Christians, we're the Gentile church. And so forth, when God makes it very plain, that's not the way it works. And again, for those who haven't gone through the first series, go back there and you'll find out exactly who and what is the true church of God. You know, your eyes shall be open, at least if you're willing to, and you have, if you have an ear, you're going to hear. If you don't, well, if your eyes are blind, you know, you can't. And that's what he's doing here. He's cleansing his temple. He has to take care of his own people first. He has to take care of the site of the center of his own people first. Because without doing that first, he cannot be presented to God as the one who atones for the sins of Israel when the temple is defiled and polluted. Because what is it that happened when he was crucified and when he died? The temple, you know, the veil to the Holy of Holies was rent in twine, and that is in two, that is, you know, cut in half. Well, he had to clean the temple first before that could be done. You see, because they were defiling the temple by their conduct and behavior there. And that's you know, the reason. As soon as he comes to Jerusalem, that's the first thing that he does. And when he died, that was the first thing that was that happened, you know. That veil that symbolized, unfortunately, not only the way to the Holy Spirit and to the throne of God, but also the fact that, you know, the people that were there were not necessarily righteous. You see, they were defiling the temple by their conduct and attitude. And he said to them, it is written, my house, you see, this is my house, shall be called a house of prayer. But you have made it a den of thieves. You see? And Christ was not going to, you know, have the Father was not going to have that veil of a den of thieves, you see, destroyed in half until he had it cleansed first. And that's what Jesus Christ, in essence, was doing here. You know, all these things are linked. You know, it's not just a coincidence that those things happen. Then the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them right there before everybody else, a witness to all, the priests, the scribes, the Pharisees, the multitudes. It never happened in Israel. That didn't do them any good. They couldn't care less. Instead, we read in verse 15, but when the chief priests and the scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, and the children crying out in the temple and saying, Hosanna, the son of David. That's the king of Israel, the God of Israel. The king, the ruler, the master. They were indignant. They were angry. Imagine that. Why? What spirit was in them? I mean, when you see all those things happen, what should be your natural reaction, even if you are not a believer in God? You see? Well, obviously, Satan the devil is also in the picture there and was poisoning minds and hearts and covetousness for power and envy. You know what he does to people, even though they know better, they know the truth. You see, they're not willing to listen. And that's the major reason behind the Middle East conflict today. God gave the land to Israel. Muhammad made it very clear time and time and time again in the Quran. This is what he did. And yet people were not willing to accept it. You see, supposedly in the name of God, Allahu Akbar, they say they want to liberate Jerusalem and kill all the Jews, drive them to the sea, and take the land to themselves. You see, what happens when people are disobedient to God? Then demons move in. The devil moves in. Unclean spirits move in. And they begin to do horrible things even though they know better. All those clerics, you know, that are inside, and all those suicide bombers and others against the Jews, cause them to hate it, all of them know, because they read in the Quran, that the land was given to the sons of Israel. Not to Ishmael, not to the Muslims, not to the Arabs, you see. Are they willing to acknowledge, you know, the words of their own prophet and Muhammad and Quran? No. These people were not willing to acknowledge the Savior of Israel, the King, even when they knew better. That's what happens when people become rebellious. Darkness takes over, and truth doesn't matter. And so the blind who were blind now were able to see, and the ones who claimed to be able to see became blind. Right there in the temple. You see two opposites happening there at the same time. And so they were indignant, they were angry. They didn't like it. And they said to him, "Do you hear what these are saying?" And Jesus said to them, "Yes. Have you never read?" Which they did. Well, they were too ignorant to acknowledge that. "Out of the mouth of babes and nursing infants, you have perfected praise." Those little guys that, you know, you don't hold in much respect, they know better than you are, even though they are little ones. That's what he told them earlier. You know, unless you become like little children, you'll never be in the kingdom of God. Then he left them and went out of the city to Bethany, and he lodged there in a little town nearby. And now in the morning, as he returned to the city, he was hungry, and seeing a fig tree by the road, he came to it and found nothing on it but leaves. And he said to it, "Let no fruit grow on you ever again." Now, some people say, "Now, wait a minute," you know, like environmentalist. You know, they say, "Hey, that's wrong. Well, what are you doing there? You're killing a tree. How dare you?" You see? And they did not understand it. Well, that was something that God was doing. He created the tree. He can do with it whatever he wants. He created animals. He can do with them whatever he wants. And so he told Israel to sacrifice. And the animal lovers said, "No, no way. That's wrong. You shouldn't do that. How dare you do that?" You know, they've got their own concept of mercy and compassion and truth and light and all that. And people are always the same in any given way. And so here it is, the tree. And immediately the fig tree withered away. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled, saying, "How did the fig tree wither away so soon?" So Jesus answered and said to them, and that's the reason why he did it, to teach them a lesson again, "Assuredly, I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree, but also if you say to this mountain, 'Be removed and be cast into the sea,' it will be done." And so he's basically telling them what he told them earlier. If you have faith like mustard seed, you will be able to do it. Now, this tree, fig tree, was summertime, was supposed to bear figs, so it's sort of a deceitful tree. It looks like a tree, like fig, that should have fruits and doesn't have any, and that's in essence what God always told his disciples, his people, Israel, and that's what John the Baptist said. Unless you bear fruit, God is going to cut you down and burn you. You're of no use. A lot of people are that way. And the only way you can bear fruits, if you're obedient to the law of God. That's the only way you're going to be able to bear fruits. You're going to take on the nature of God and then bear fruits. And when people don't get that message, they're going to continue to be like this dry fig, dry, you know, and God is going to cause that tree that you are wither away and be gone, become ashes, and be no more. So that was a spiritual example there to all of us. And so he says to them, "And whatever things you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive." Assuming it is the will of God, obviously. You take that into account. Verse 23, "Now when he came into the temple, the chief priests," that's the second time, "and the elders of the people confronted him." Imagine that. Instead of rejoicing, running to him, kneeling down before him, confronted him. That's what happens when you rebel against the law of God. You want to do your own thing. You see, you become an adversary of God instead of a friend or a servant of God. So they confronted him as he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority? Whom do you think you are?" Forget about all the miracles and signs and wonders that he did, which they could never do, and they should have known, only a man of God, only a servant of God, you know, even if you don't believe he's a prophet of God, can do it. You see, that's what happens to people. Truth doesn't matter. You know, people like that will tell you, please don't confuse me with the facts. And we function like that, unfortunately. And the higher and the mighty they are, you know, the more arrogant and haughty they are, and the more blind they are. But Jesus answered and said to them, I also will ask you one thing, you know, just like an Irishman, you ask me a question, I'll answer you with a question. And that's what they say about the Jews too. You ask a Jew a question, he answers you with a question. And he replies with a question. I will also ask you one thing, which of you tell me, that is, if you can tell me, I likewise will tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, where was it from? From heaven or from men? Now, he got them there. Because the whole nation believed in John the Baptist, and they were not about to say something against it because they knew everybody's going to come after them. And so they reasoned among themselves, you know, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the multitude. Not God, we fear the multitude, for all count John as a prophet. You see, everybody, all, the whole nation knew John the Baptist, and therefore knew the message that he gave about the one coming after him. That's the way men of religion are oftentimes, unfortunately, and to this very day they are that way. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point again. This is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.